The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors. You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin, and joining us is Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Dr. Slavin.
And I want to remind everybody, if they haven't had a chance yet, to tune into that free online breast cancer prevention seminar. It's ongoing all this week. And if you go to our website, naturaldocradio.com, if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, you'll see the link to sign up for the free seminar. A lot of excellent information being discussed with about 18 world-class lecturers. So just a reminder. And here's another reminder. This is the headline. Medical errors, still the third leading cause of death. So, you know the saying, forewarned is forearmed. You know, in other words, if you know where the mistakes are coming from, hopefully you'll do a better job of preventing them. But here's something that I wasn't aware of, because I was aware of this statistic about medical errors. You know, another way of saying medical errors are the third leading cause of death? Yeah, doctors are responsible for the third leading cause of death. Doctors and hospitals. But not necessarily intentionally. It comes out of sometimes their mistakes, sometimes unnecessary
treatment. Okay, Dr. Slavin,
yes.
Are those mistakes made because the doctors are distracted? Are those mistakes made because the doctor is overworked or fatigued? Are the mistakes made because they don't investigate fully the combinations of chemicals that they're using on their patients? Do you have any indication of why those mistakes happen, those medical errors?
All of the above. But what I wanted to go into a little more background here, the original report regarding medical errors came out in the year 2000. It was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. It was written by a Dr. Barbara Starfield. And her research documented at that time, this is going back and now 16 years ago, that 225,000 Americans die from what's called iatrogenic causes, meaning doctor-caused errors or just mistakes. Any, you know, you just unnecessarily, let's put that, unnecessary reasons. So it's due to the physician or the hospital's activity, manner, or therapy. So she, at that time, she came up with these numbers. About 12,000 die from unnecessary surgery. All right, so what does that mean? That means get a second opinion. You know, you have to research it. Now, unfortunately, a lot of times, you don't have time to do that research because things happen very quickly or maybe in an emergency situation. But if you do, you know, a second opinion is always important. 7,000 die from medication errors in hospitals. Now, I know the hospitals really do go out of their way not to make mistakes, but they still do.
Dr. Slavin, I have a story about the medication and hospital errors. Someone was due to go in for a cardiac ablation, and he was told to check into the hospital the night before the scheduled procedure. And he checked into the hospital, and they put him into a room and started an IV. And he didn't ask what that intravenous medication was. And it turned out that it was warfarin. Now, he was going into the hospital because of atrial fibrillation, and what's one of the things that the doctors do for atrial fibrillation, it is to give warfarin, Coumadin, and now there are newer medications such as Eliquis. So here he was on an intravenous pump West blood thinning, seriously blood thinning medication, and he was due for an invasive procedure the following day. And when it was discovered that he had been on 12 hours of intravenous warfarin, of course the procedure had to be postponed. But how might something like that happen? How could doctor's directives, and I would imagine it would require a doctor to have an order in the patient's chart to do intravenous warfarin. How could something like that happen?
Well, okay, just a correction. Coumadin is not given intravenously. It's probably heparin. And the way it would happen probably is that there are protocols in hospitals. So here you have a patient admitted and the diagnosis is atrial fibrillation. So the protocol might automatically say, okay, put him on blood thinners. So the doctor, instead of writing the order for blood thinners, would have to say, hold all blood thinners. Because there's a protocol that would automatically put a patient on that. And if the doctor's
okay,
not aware
so
that
the hospital
had those...
An order to use blood thinners. It would be an automatic response based on the admitting caregiver's decisions. It just didn't make sense to me.
I mean, that would be my explanation, that they have these protocols that are automatic, whether the doctor orders it or not.
No.
I've had that happen to patients of mine where they got flu vaccines and pneumococcal vaccines automatically in the hospital. That's their protocol. Unless I were to write, hold all, flu vaccines or, hold all vaccines. So that may have been the reason. Maybe these protocols are not the best approach. Too many people are getting involved in the care of the patient. It used to be, by the way, that everything done would funnel through the primary care of the doctor who admitted the patient. In other words, let's say you have a very sick patient. He would be seen by several specialists. The specialists would not write orders in the chart. They would write the order in their note so that when the primary care doctor came in, he would see it and they would all funnel through him, so he would be more likely to pick up a problem. Instead, everybody's writing orders in the chart, and then it funnels down to the pharmacy that fills the orders to pick up any conflicting medication orders. So going on, Janet, so 20,000 people die from other hospital errors besides medication errors. 80,000 die, and this is a real important number now, 80,000 die from hospital-acquired infections. In other words, you went in for something else, and while you were in the hospital, you picked up an infection and died. Now, a lot of times that could be after an operation that it gets infected, you have problems. And it's not just infections. You can die from pulmonary embolisms. When you're sick, your blood becomes more, tends to clot more easily, and if you're not given anticoagulants, that risk is high. And then you have this number, 106,000 die from the negative side effects of drugs taken as prescribed. In other words, there was no mistake here. They were taken the way the drug was supposed to be taken, and 106,000 die. Now, that, of course, that doesn't all happen in a hospital. That can happen outside the hospital. I'm going to give you a little story, which was kind of interesting. But that doctor who wrote that article, Dr. Starfield, that was 16 years ago, and recently in the British Medical Journal, they now say medical errors now kill an estimated 250,000 Americans each year, so it's up about 25,000. So either nothing is being done, or it's just difficult to address the problem, but the potential victim, called the patient, just has to be aware of these things and take added precautions. In 2013, published research estimated that preventable hospital errors kill 210,000 Americans each year. But here's the problem. There are a lot of issues going on in hospitals that aren't even reported properly. When they included deaths related to diagnostic errors, for example, in other words, you came in with a symptom, they missed the underlying cause and treated you for something else, that would be a diagnostic error. Errors of omission, a test showed something, you just happened to miss that, and they didn't treat you for the problem. Or failure to follow the guidelines. If you include all those, now you have 440,000 preventable hospital deaths each year. So here's the part of the story that I found kind of interesting. It goes on to say, ironically, Dr. Starfield, who reported this statistic back in 2000, she died suddenly in June 2011, a death her husband, who was also a physician, attributed to the adverse effects of the blood thinner Plavix, taken in combination with aspirin. However, the death certificate makes no mention of that possibility, and that's what happens. You know, there's a cover-up here. May not be intentional, because there is no place on the death certificate to put, you know, a side effect of, say, medication in this case.
Dr. Slavin, do you know how many people I see, and when they list their medications, Plavix is on the list along with aspirin? And I always ask them, do you have a conversation with your doctor about this combination? Does your doctor know that you are taking Plavix along with aspirin? And invariably, the reply is, my doctor put me on Plavix with aspirin.
Well, they're certainly doing that, but you have to be monitored. See, the key is medical supervision, but also the key is for the patient to be aware of the potential adverse side effects of taking medications so they can report them. But there's another problem with Plavix. They don't have an antidote. And we'll talk more about that when we come back after this break. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. We'll be back right after this.
Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Herbert Slavin and Janet Cimarelli. They're located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill. And you can find them on the web at advancedmedicaltesting.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience. Clean, comfortable, and efficient. They guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest prices. They test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. They draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostics, Simulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call them today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via phone, Skype, or email with the convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at JanetCimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m., right here on this station.
You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. We've been talking about the impact of errors and how they might be responsible, this is medical errors of all types, be responsible for over 400,000 deaths a year. And if you understand where these errors are coming from, you can do a better job in preventing them. Now, you were mentioning the use of Plavix and aspirin together. And I mentioned that, you know, if you start bleeding when you're on some of these new anticoagulants, Plavix being one of them, they don't have an antidote to stop the effects of the drug like they do with Coumadin. With Coumadin, if you start bleeding, they can give vitamin K, but they don't have that for these other drugs.
And I just want to jump in here and let people know that the vitamin K2, minoquinone, which is a vitamin used to support proper calcium metabolism, is not a substance that is going to create clots or thicken the blood or stop abnormal bleeding. I think it's really important that people understand that there are different forms of the vitamin K, because so many of the women that I speak to are afraid to use vitamin K when they are dealing with loss of bone density, but it is not a vitamin that they should have any concern about using.
All right. Well, if you're taking Coumadin, that's what you're talking about, Coumadin and vitamin K?
Well, if you're dealing with abnormal bleeding, one of the ways that the doctor can stop that abnormal bleeding is to give vitamin K, but it's different forms of vitamin K than what is given to stop abnormal bleeding.
But they also say when you're on Coumadin, and I disagree with this for a good reason, they say don't have green leafy vegetables, you know.
Right, those green leafy vegetables have vitamin K, but I tell people all the time that those green leafy vegetables above and beyond the vitamin K content have a variety of different minerals, other vitamins, fiber, nutrients that are very important for good health, as well as the fact that if you have a little bit of the vitamin K that is present in those green leafy vegetables, then you are not going to create a problem for your blood thinning regimen. One of the things that I had seen over the years as well is people on long-term Coumadin therapy, they have a disruption of minerals. Very often, the iron is pulled out of their blood and tends to be deposited in their lower legs, lower extremities. The other issue is a disruption of calcium metabolism. So there's a lot of little details and complications as part of this blood thinning approach. And it's very interesting because the medical community shies away from using things like garlic or vitamin E or fish oil to maintain thin enough blood, preventing blood clots in the cases of atrial fibrillation. But, you know, I think possibly in some of those milder issues with atrial fibrillation, maybe the natural substances might be more beneficial for the patient than the drugs.
All right, so we were talking before the break about the use of Plavix along with aspirin. And in the context of atrial fibrillation, I think you were saying, and that is not the indication. The indication of using that combination is after an individual's had a TIA or a full-blown stroke in order to prevent a second ischemic stroke. You know, two types of strokes. You have the stroke caused by a blood clot, and you have the stroke caused by bleeding. So the one caused by a blood clot, that's where they say use the two. So using it for other indications may not be appropriate. So I want to get back to the person who wrote the original article published in JAMA, Dr. Starfield. So what happened to her back in 2012, she died. She had been on a combination of Plavix with aspirin, and her death certificate made no mention that this could have been contributing to her death. And her husband, who was a doctor, wrote an editorial published in the Archives of Internal Medicine the following year. He says, I express my upfront potential conflict of interest in interpreting the facts surrounding the death of my wife, because she died while swimming alone. An autopsy was required. The immediate cause of death was pool drowning. But the underlying condition, cerebral hemorrhage, stunned me. In other words, yeah, she died while swimming. They said she died from drowning. But when they did the autopsy, they saw she had a cerebral bleed in her brain. And the history here is she had started taking low-dose aspirin after coronary insufficiency had been diagnosed 3 years before her death, and Plavix after her right main coronary artery had been stented 6 months after the diagnosis. So I don't know if this is a common thing. I have a hunch it might be, the use of those two drugs together. She reported to her cardiologist that she bruised more easily while taking the Plavix and bled longer following minor cuts. She had no personal or family history of bleeding tendency or high blood pressure. The autopsy finding and the official lack of feedback, and this is her husband saying this, prompted me to call attention to deficiencies in medical care and clinical research in the United States regarding her death, because, you know, here you can see that that intracerebral bleed was most likely related to the fact that she was on these blood thinners. And so think about how many people die and the real cause of death isn't mentioned. So, you know, the cause of death was, if you ever look at a death certificate, they'll say the cause of death, and they give you two or three other lines, secondary to. So here it should have said, you know, death by drowning, secondary to intracerebral bleed, secondary to the use of Plavix and aspirin. Now, here's the problem with Plavix and aspirin is there's no way to measure the effect of anticoagulation you're getting from those drugs. It's like a one-size-fits-all. At least with Coumadin, you can adjust the dosages and, you know, you can do a test and just see the level of anticoagulation. And believe it or not, that's the sales point of using Plavix. They say you don't have to go to the doctor now for testing, because, you know, there is no test to determine it. So, you know, I just want to see how, you know, little things like that that people are put on, these drugs, you know, aspirin, Plavix, you see the commercials constantly, and people don't think twice about it. So here's another point that we've addressed before. The U.S. has the most expensive health care in the world, spending more on health care than the next 10 biggest spenders combined. In other words, this country alone spends more than the sum of Japan, Germany, France, China, England, Italy, Canada, Brazil, Spain, and Australia. So, I mean, you ought to think twice about that as well. If the U.S. healthcare system were a country, it would be the sixth largest economy in the entire planet. That's how much we spend. And despite this, U.S. ranks last in health and mortality when compared with 17 other developed nations. So that's another way of putting it. Remember when we talked about life expectancy, U.S. ranked in the 30s. In other words, more than 30 countries living longer than we do. How do we view this? Well, we have one of the best healthcare systems for treating acute surgical emergencies. But the American medical system is clearly an unmitigated failure when it comes to treating chronic illness. The fact that properly prescribed and administered drugs kill at least 106,000 patients each year should make people think a little bit. You remember yesterday, I think it was, Jen, or the day before, we talked about the use of different medications. And you could look at each medication and the adverse effects, but then you have to go one step further. If you're on more than one medication, which they say is very common, you have to look at drug interactions. And there are applications, you can go on Google and find them, where you can plug in the different drugs you're on and make sure you don't have a drug interaction. The doctors aren't doing that, so you're going to have to do it for yourself.
It's very interesting, because part of that whole picture of interaction is disregarding chemicals, preservatives, colorings in foods. Then you talk about how the United States healthcare system is doing very poorly when analyzing chronic disease situations and degenerative disease situations. And I'm very much of the opinion that you have to plug in the information about what are Americans eating. They're eating very poor quality foods, foods that are full of chemicals that not only don't nourish, may interfere with the delivery of nutrients to the body, and certainly you don't have any indication about how these chemicals in preserved and processed foods interact with the pharmaceuticals that so many of our citizens are using.
And Janet, I think I hear some music in the background, which means it's time for us to take another break. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and we'll be back right after this.
Are you concerned with the current state of your heart and blood vessels? Advanced Medical Testing Centers, your premier blood draw center, draws for Singulex Labs, which offers specialized blood tests that can help you uncover hidden cardiovascular disease that other tests may miss. Talk to your doctor today about the Singulex test and call Advanced Medical Testing Centers to schedule your blood draw. We guarantee your on-time appointment and guarantee the lowest price. Call us at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a proud sponsor of Natural Doc Radio, which airs on this station each weekday morning at 10 a.m.
The Institute of Advanced Medicine brings you the latest in natural health care, reviewing the published research, attending conferences with health experts from around the world. That allows the healthcare team at the Institute of Advanced Medicine in Lauderhill to provide you the quality and experience you're searching for in a healthcare team. Testing to target your individual needs and treating with natural and holistic approaches, the goal is wellness. You can reach the Institute of Advanced Medicine easily on Commercial Boulevard, just west of the Florida Turnpike, or three blocks east of University Drive in Lauderhill. You can call us 954-748-4991 to learn more. 954-748-4991. 4991.
You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. We've been talking about medical errors and probably a high percentage of them. In fact, I think the majority of them are drug-related. Perhaps secondary to taking one drug, probably more than likely taking combinations of drugs. And specifically, we were talking about what happened to the person, the doctor that wrote the original article, talking about these medical mistakes, dying of a drug interaction herself. Now listen to that. I mean, think about it. The person that was acutely aware of these potential problems couldn't prevent her own death. She was put on Plavix and aspirin, and she died while swimming alone, and the cause of death was drowning. But because she died alone, an autopsy was done, and it was discovered she had an intracerebral bleed, and that was really the cause of the drowning. You know, she lost consciousness and drowned. And
Dr. Slavin, so she had reported to her doctor that she had unusual bruising. She had reported to her doctor that a small cut would bleed for an unusually long amount of time. And so she was a physician, possibly not necessarily aware. Why would she not be aware of the potential dangers from those minimal signs, the bleeding and the bruising?
It's not that she's not aware of the potential dangers. She wasn't aware of the catastrophic effects that could happen. You know, a lot of people have become bruised easily, and I always recommend that they cut back on the dose. The trouble with Plavix and aspirin, there is no dosage adjustment. It's sort of a one-size-fits-all, so that becomes the problem. And and the doctors are put in a difficult situation. It's like a double-edged sword. If you're at higher risk of a stroke, or in this case, she had a cardiac stent put in, you know, you want to prevent the stent from reoccluding. Of course, the best way to prevent that is prevent the underlying problem in the first place. Don't use stents, because they do occlude, get blocked up on their own. And anyway, but this is the standard of care in this country. We use, we do stents, we put people on anticoagulants. But here's the part that the public isn't being made aware of. Only a tiny fraction of all adverse drug reactions are ever reported to the FDA. And according to some estimates, as few as 1%. So that means 99% of adverse drug reactions the FDA never hears about.
Why is that?
Well, because maybe they don't appreciate it. Maybe they don't necessarily appreciate the magnitude of the potential problem. So by filing a report, you help make medicine safer for everyone. So if you believe you're experiencing a side effect from a drug, you should report it. Simply go to FDA Consumer Complaint Coordinator page, find the phone number listed for your state, and report the adverse reaction. So you can do this on your own. You don't even need a physician to do it. The trouble is, a lot of times you may be having an adverse reaction and not even associated with the drug you're taking. I think that's part of the problem too. In all, preventable medical mistakes may account for 1/6 of the deaths that occur in the United States annually. To put these numbers into further perspective, medical mistakes in American hospitals kill 4 jumbo jets worth of people each week. According to statistics published
each week. Oh my goodness.
In 2011, the incidence rates of medical harm occurring in the U.S. may be as high as 40,000 harmful and or lethal errors daily. So we need to be aware of this, and that's why we try to emphasize keeping people healthy. You know, that's a novel idea when it comes to healthcare in this country, to keep people healthy. Healthcare in this country is primarily prescribing drugs. So the problem comes up. Overtesting and overtreatment are another area of the problem. Instead of dissuading patients from unnecessary or questionable interventions, the system rewards waste and incentivizes disease over health. According to a report by the Institute of Medicine, an estimated 30% of all medical procedures, tests, and medications may in fact be unnecessary at a cost of at least $750 billion, with a B, dollars a year.
Dr. Slavin, why are insurance companies not interested in these statistics? Because it is the insurance company actually paying out these dollars.
I think it has to do with the fact that the insurance companies work hand in hand with the drug companies and the the companies that deal with surgery and with hospitals. So you have the insurance company paying out the money to the different agencies that they've invested in. In other words, the hospital companies and the drug companies, they're all invested in. So that's how they get a return on their investment that way.
Okay,
is my take
so
on it, because
insurance premiums are being collected by the insurance company. The insurance company is buying stock and ownership participation in hospital corporations and pharmaceutical corporations, and consequently their investments are very profitable. And so they want the hospitals to do more business, and they want the pharmaceutical companies to sell more drugs.
And they're very successful at that.
It seems that way.
And here's another area. You need to be aware that, they come up with these new medical treatments, and they gain popularity over the older standards of care due mostly to clever marketing as opposed to solid science. Now, the Mayo Clinic published in 2013 a report on this point. To determine the overall effectiveness of our medical care, researchers tracked the frequency of medical reversals over the past decade. They found that reversals are common across all classes of medical practice, and a significant proportion of medical treatments offer no potential benefit at all. So here's what they found precisely. They found 146 reversals of previously established practices, treatments, and procedures over the past 10 years. In other words, what they're saying is we had a standard of care. It was found to be fairly effective, but it was replaced for a more lucrative one. For example, the most telling data in the report show that just how many common medical treatments are doing more harm than good. Of the studies that tested an existing standard of care, 40% reversed the practice compared to only 38% reaffirming it. In other words, they're putting in these untested approaches with questionable outcomes. So I think what they're saying is, and this has been said before, I remember a report that came out by the General Accounting Office that said probably only 10% of the practices utilized in mainstream medicine were actually proven to be effective with an appropriate study, that a lot of the tests done were not really proven effective. And we can go right down the list. We can question the use of bypass surgery. Now, bypass surgery is effective in, as the name implies, bypassing a blockage in the patient's coronary arteries. But if you're told that it's going to prevent future heart attacks, that's wrong. The type of blockage that's being bypassed are not the cause of future heart attacks, so it's not addressing that at all.
Dr. Dr. Slavin, there was the therapy external counterpulsation, and the theory behind that therapy was by forcing blood toward the heart when the heart was at rest in between beats, would force the creation of tiny blood vessels that would circuit around blockage in the coronary arteries. And that would have been maybe one-fifth or even less the cost of doing bypass surgery. And so here's the very, very clear decision to choose something that is dramatic, heroic, and hugely more expensive over something that's effective and ultimately much less harmful to the patient.
Exactly. Well, external counterpulsation is a treatment approach to allow the patient to develop their own collateral circulation. In other words, their own natural bypasses to any blockages. Makes perfect sense, and it worked. But it was never really promoted so that...
Doesn't Julian Whitaker at his wellness center still use external counterpulsation?
I believe it
isn't covered by insurance, but...
No, it was. It was covered by Medicare, but what happened when Medicare, when it first came out, reimbursement was adequate to do the treatment, and then they dropped the reimbursement by half. You know, so you're talking about perhaps a treatment to create your own collateral circulation in the heart might cost maybe $7,000 versus the bypass procedure that costs over $100,000, and they opt for the $100,000 approach.
Dr. Slavin, how much money might a patient be required to put out as a copay if they're undergoing a $100,000 procedure like bypass surgery?
Well, it's usually about 20%, so you're looking at $20,000 out of pocket.
So it would certainly make more sense to spend the $7,000 on external counterpulsation. You're still going to save money.
Or you could do chelation therapy, which is shown to be extremely effective. Or if you wanted to stay with mainstream medicine, if you could control with medication, your outcomes are the same. In other words, the death rate in the first 2 years on medication versus surgery, you do better with medication. And that music means it's time for another break. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. And we'll be back with more right after this.
Did you know that you can be eating a healthy diet, but that your body may not be absorbing the vitamins and nutrients from your foods? Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a premier blood draw center servicing Genova Diagnostics Lab. Genova offers an advanced comprehensive blood test that identifies your body's deficiencies in absorbing vitamins, nutrients, and essential cofactors. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard in Lauderhill. They offer an on-time appointment guarantee and the lowest price guarantee. Schedule your appointment today for a blood draw for the Genova Diagnostics Nutritional Evaluation Test. Call Advanced Medical Testing Centers at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via telephone, Skype, or email with convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at JanetCimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 to 11 a.m., right here on AM 1470 WNN.
You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. We've been talking about medical errors, and a very common combination of drugs that are used is the combination of Plavix and aspirin. And I just wanted to point out that a definitive indication for long-term combination antiplatelet therapy, in other words, the use of Plavix with aspirin, for example, has not been demonstrated. So they don't have any real proof that that combination is worthwhile, and, you know, worthwhile because you got to look at the both sides of the sword here. On the one hand, maybe it'll reduce the risk of a thrombotic event, but on the other hand, it may increase the risk of a bleed, and you want to avoid both of those. So they don't really have the answers as far as the combination use of drugs. So you have to, you know, and unfortunately, medicine is turning into what they call cookbook medicine. You have a problem, you look up the recipe for that problem, and you put everybody one size fits all, and that's what they do. Oh, you had a stroke? Okay, this is the protocol. Everybody goes on it. But really, you have to take everybody's specific condition into effect. For example, you have to look at what type of stroke it was. What are their comorbidities? In other words, what are the other health challenges they have? There may be contraindications to it. For example, if you have an older patient who might be prone to falling because of balance issues, for example, if they fall, then they increase the risk of bleeding. I'll give you something for as simple as that. You fall, a patient falls, breaks their hip, but they're on anticoagulants. They can bleed enough into their hip that they can die, you know, exsanguinate just from that. So little things like that. I even had a patient once, I think, if I recall, because this is like 30 years ago, was on anticoagulants and went for a massage. So you know how you can go with these deep massages, sometimes a little painful when they press on those muscles. Anyway, he came in and he had an extensive bleed in his leg. His whole leg was black and blue because of the bleeding caused by the massage in combination with the anticoagulants you're on. So that'd be an example of things you need to consider. So if you pick your patients properly, you can reduce the risk of side effects. But if you treat everybody as a one-size-fits-all, then you're going to run into trouble. We have a couple of minutes left. We were talking about the fact that rather than use a $7,000 external counter pulsation treatment for creating a patient's own natural bypasses, they opt for the surgical approach, which invariably costs over $100,000 a year. And remember I said the medical approach, giving medication, gets comparable results to the surgical approach. So if you just gave medication and skipped the surgery, you would do just as well. The only time I think one can argue for the surgery is if for some reason the patient couldn't tolerate the medication or it wasn't helping their situation. But then you can use other approaches. There's chelation therapy. Nobody, when practiced properly, dies from chelation. By the way, it's been reported you have a 5% death rate from using from bypass surgery. So a lot of people are dying from a bypass surgery, but that's a perfect example of it's not being recorded on the death certificate. Probably the death certificate will say cardiac arrest secondary to coronary artery disease, and they probably wouldn't say, oh, secondary to bypass surgery. So they wouldn't, you know, that wouldn't be noted. And they have to convince you, too, without the surgery, you're expected to die. And that just hasn't been borne out with, you know, with the studies at all. John, I just want to touch briefly again on the use of ultraviolet blood therapy and how the use of that can be very effective in the context of coronary artery disease. You know, we talk about it in the context of treating all different types of infections, whether they're caused by viruses or bacteria or a fungus. But in the context of coronary artery disease, it has antiplatelet activity, so it's going to prevent blood clots. It's going to reduce atherosclerosis, in other words, you know, the plaque formation. Besides all the other beneficial effects, and I'm recommending to patients now that those who come here for chelation therapy because they have coronary artery disease, for example, or peripheral vascular disease, that they do a combination of both together, because when you combine the ultraviolet blood treatment with the chelation, you're going to improve the circulation throughout the body immediately with the ultraviolet blood treatment, which will then allow the chelation therapy to be even more effective over time. Jana, we have coming up June 11th, which is a Saturday at 10 a.m., a seminar that will allow people who attend some firsthand knowledge about what we're talking about when it comes to ultraviolet blood therapy. And we're going to talk about other treatments that you're not going to hear about at other doctors' offices simply because they're not doing it. You know, that's what that seminar will be about. We haven't posted it yet because we're just waiting for the breast cancer prevention free online seminar to be over with. That'll be over this Saturday. So next week, we'll post all that and the phone numbers to call and reserve a spot because space is limited. And should be very interesting. We're also going to show you the cell well-being test, which is, I'd have to call it 21st century medicine. Janet, have you seen the you've seen the report that comes from that test?
I have. It is such an incredibly comprehensive report, and to get that kind of information absolutely allows people to make much more informed decisions about directions they need to take to support good health.
Okay, so in order to support good health, in other words, let's stay out of the healthcare system if you can, eat real food. I think that would be the probably the number one recommendation. Get plenty of non-exercise movement. In other words, don't sit around all day. Get up, walk around. That's important. Be aware of the stress you're under because, you know, I talk to patients. They all admit to being under stress, but they're not doing anything about it. Make sure you drink enough water. Make sure your digestive tract is healthy. In other words, make sure you're supplying you know, probiotics and fermented foods that also help to maintain a healthy digestive tract. Make sure your vitamin D levels are optimal, just not within the range. Avoid toxic exposures. That's a big one that we don't pay attention to because we take for granted all those products that contain toxins, but we don't appreciate it, like all the household cleaners, soaps, personal hygiene products, air fresheners, lawn pesticides. Get enough sleep. That is extremely important because people who don't get enough sleep have an increased risk of type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, memory loss. I mean, so, you know, you can't depend on your doctor to make you healthy. It's got to come from you, but you have to know what you need to do in order to be healthy. And so that's the first step. You know, just just take a review of your day-to-day living, and everybody can make improvements in that. Jen, I know what, like I mentioned, drink enough water. When you see your clients, I think that's probably a number one issue for them.
It's a big issue, and it's very interesting because a lot of times when they ask, are you drinking enough water? And I know that the answer is certainly not adequate intake of water. And invariably the answer is, I try. And I say, well, you have to make a goal, and I give them a certain number of ounces and some options with regard to water, herb teas, water that has lemon in it, or now a company makes a very nice flavored powder addition. So there are many different ways to make the water a little bit more exciting.
And how much water should someone drink a day?
Okay, the rule of thumb is divide your body weight in half, and that's how many ounces you should drink. But for people who are not moving around, not doing very much exercise, maybe that is an optimistic goal. And for people who are exercising a lot, losing a lot of body fluid, then very much they should increase it above that rule of thumb.
And on that note, we've just run out of time. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slaven with Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and we'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Bye-bye, everybody.
You have been listening to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Listen every day for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in again next time and get healthy. Opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of the station, its staff, management, or sponsors.